Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
From KQED.
Mic check, check one, check two. Are we here? All right, we're here right now-ish.
Welcome, welcome. Come on in, take your shoes off, pull up a beanbag chair, and put some aromatherapy in the air. You're tuned in to Right Now-ish. I'm your host, Pendarvis Harshaw. April is National Poetry Month, so let's give the people what they want. A bit of old, a taste of the new. We've got Alan Cesaro for interview part two. Educator, poet, and now journalist, Alan Cesaro joined us about a year and a half ago to discuss his chapbook, This Is Not a Frank Ocean Cover Album. In his newest book, you can see him taking a deeper and more evolved dive into some of the same themes.
The idea of who I am and growing up on hip-hop and growing up in the Bay, being first-generation Mexican-American Pocho, I wanted all of that to be in the book, and the idea of the piñata theory encapsulates that for me.
Stay put as Alan Cesaro discusses poetry, machismo, Kendrick Lamar, and growing as a writer.
Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions, online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll get to Alan Cesaro's newest book, Piñata Theory, but first, we gotta rewind to a conversation that happened pre-pandemic. Back when coming together to break bread wasn't an issue and we could still get some wings at Oakland's Lucky 37 without a mask.
I love the wings, but that beefsteak, it's catching my eye, I don't know. And I feel like they make their food with love and they embrace the Bay and it's like, you can like taste it.
Taste the Bay.
I don't know if I want to taste the Bay. I don't know, I was at Alameda Beach the other day, put my feet in, dog. Like, that's as deep as I'm going.
Alan, he's this dude who's on top of being a poet and educator, he's a Mexican-American man who talks about masculinity with fluidity.
The De La Hoya one stood out to me because I grew up in a black community where the big fights were Tyson fights. Mm-hmm. And so I remember this fight, but it wasn't as big of a magnitude, you know?
It was vivid, man.
For me, it was like, that's,
Ladies and gentlemen, from the site where legends are made.
So this poem is called Julio Cesar Chavez versus Oscar De La Hoya in 1996.
Let's get ready to...
That night, our apartment was an armpit. Testosterone and sweat washed as if Papi and his friends were the ones entering the ring. The men laughed, easily entertained until Chavez appeared on screen.
Con Culiacan, Mexico, Julio Cesar Chavez.
The Mexican warrior, they called him. Papi reminded me how he had battled 100 fighters, more than Ali or Tyson or Dempsey. Then De La Hoya entered. Everyone booed, telling him to go back to his locker like the traitor he was. The Mexicans thought he was gringo and the gringos thought he was Mexican. I should have smiled with missing front teeth for the golden boy in his mixed up outfit, a combo of US and Mexican flags, but I didn't. I'm glad you chose that one, dude. That's actually one of my earliest poems in this. I think it might be the oldest poem in this packet. Yeah. So I grew up with just my dad and my older brother, and my mom never lived with us. My sister never lived with us. So it was very like male-centric, kind of like stereotypical. A lot of male friends always around. And my dad was a Mexican immigrant. So I definitely was like around a lot of homies growing up and close friends that were male. But a lot of my friends by nature, me and my brother being first generation American, a lot of our friends were in the same boat, basically.
Yeah.
It can be very close-minded. You know, like no smile, just kind of standing there like a statue. I could just feel like people were putting on an image rather than being themselves. I started doing graffiti and freestyling. And I think those were like quote unquote acceptable ways of me to express myself as a young man of color growing up in the Bay. And eventually towards community college, I started getting into poetry. I started becoming more comfortable with like my sense of being a poet rather than like a graffiti artist or like this kid that could rap or something.
Right.
Yeah.
This is not a Frank Ocean cover album. Why is that the title?
Because I grew up in the U.S. Hip hop is a huge part of my identity. Like my first album I ever owned was, I'm pretty sure it was fourth grade, and it was Tupac. It was the one with Casey and JoJo. Damn, I can't remember the name.
Toss It Up?
Toss It Up, yeah, man. Drop the top, I pull over, getting busy in the parking lot. I think it was
you
that
were
one.
Fourth yeah, grade yeah. Listening to Toss
yeah,
It
yeah,
Up.
Yeah, dude, and that's what happens when you have a single parent immigrant who's like working and never at home, you know? I feel like I've been shaped by a lot of hip hop and artists in particular. And we all have, you know what I mean? Like, we're all, as Americans, just constantly sort of finding how we fit in with, like, aligning ourselves to the stars that we admire.
Dang.
You know what I mean? And I kind of was, like, listening to Frank Ocean a lot during that specific time period of writing. And I was just like, damn, this guy's cool. Like, he's not afraid to be himself and to be vulnerable and to like, embrace his community. And he's also just hella talented. And there were so many things going into it that I was like, I want to allude to that somehow, but also not be like, I am Frank Ocean, because that would just be creepy. You
know that would mean? Be really weird.
It's like, this is a kind of a cover album, but it's kind of not. Like,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, all right, so I got to admit to you, sometimes when I read written poetry, I'm like, I don't know what the hell is going on here, bro.
You're not alone.
So I want to take this opportunity for you to decode some things for me.
Yeah.
In the poem Bricks, one of the lines that stood out to me was, I'm more caterpillar than panther?
Yeah.
what does that mean?
The poem ends by saying that basically, like, I feel more caterpillar than panther, because people might see any of us on the street, you or me, and be like, oh, like, that's a man of color, and they assume all these things. But I feel like deep inside, I'm this, like, pretty gentle, calm dude that appreciates transformation and growth, hence me being a public high school teacher, you know what I mean? I'm not afraid to be like, nah, I'm that caterpillar dude. It's all good. Just gonna spread my wings. That's fine. Also, shout out to Kendrick Lamar.
Right.
That conversation was back in 2019. Since then, Alan has released a book of poems, and he's been diving into journalism, even freelancing for KQED. With all of the growth, we figured it'd be a good time to check in. We talked, almost 2 years ago now, and so much life has happened since then. I wanted to first just start off with a piece of poetry.
Much love. Thanks for bringing me back, dude. So I'm going to read a poem from my latest collection of poetry, Piñata Theory, which came out during the pandemic. So it's been a strange time to kind of peddle my poems, but here we go with one. It's called Ode to Kendrick Lamar. There are nights like tonight when it rains biblical amounts of everything and music plays while I drive somewhere I usually don't go after dark, because I get lost in my head while my wife plans for next week and I try to decide where to park and when to leave, but instead I down IPAs and smash In-N-Out burgers into my gut before the smallest words crawl out, forced. Some days I feel the dark rushing, a tidal wave of fuck yous cresting my insides. I double knot my Tims and avert eye contact in a hoodie and baseball cap. I am not this facade, have never sailed a fist into a stranger's skull, but there is a thunderstorm coming and I must know my way. Tomorrow, I'll drive a pickup to the end of the road on the other side of 880. I'll park and read poetry while 18-wheelers rumble within inches of my chest. It's what excites and repels my attention while riding this neighborhood. How the blood of sweet grass reminds me of something else.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Bring us into your world. What was going on when you wrote that poem?
That particular poem, I want to say, was written in like 2015. And I remember that because I was a graduate student at the University of San Francisco in the creative writing program. And at that time, I was living in South Hayward. And I used to have to take like the bus to get to the bar and then the bar all the way to the city. Kendrick had just dropped his secret album called Untitled Unmastered. I was bumping it a lot because I was riding the bar. I was on the bus to like occupy my mind. And I wanted to kind of honor Kendrick as an artist who is unafraid to just put out raw art. These metamorphic supernatural forces dominate what I see. And be himself, present him and his community in a sort of different way, right? It's not always like a stereotypical narrative. And when he does tell his narratives, I feel a sense of like fullness and humanity in his work. That's what I love about poetry and writing in general, because when I read that poem, it transports me back to that moment in my life when I was like this graduate student that was just grinding to like, you know, I had like a full ride scholarship. My only thing was just reading, consuming poetry and sort of vibing with different art forms and just being present in the Bay Area as fully as I could.
Imagine if you could just be a grad student at all times. Like what you just described should be life, right?
Yeah. No, I know it's kind of cliche in a way, but I always tell my students that like, how lucky are we that our purpose in this space is that we're trying to grow in our craft, in our sense of knowing the world, in our sense of voice and possibility. You know, I try not to do it too much because then they're going to be like, man, shut up, dude. But I think when you understand that that's not a given in the world, you start to really appreciate how beautiful it is that our job is to learn right now.
Since interviewing you the first time, I've been keeping up with your writing, your growth, and seeing your byline in 48 Hills and SF Gate and being shared through the newsletters with the Warriors. What type of growth have you experienced behind the scenes? What have you learned about poetry?
It's an art form of the interior. To me, it's like a meditative space. When I'm writing poems, I want to go inward and I want to reflect and I want to pick through the fragments of myself and sort of grapple with all of these layers of my identity. But then there's other days where I'm feeling very social and I want to talk to people and I want to tell other people's stories. So I've been doing a lot more journalism and I found that like I can apply my poetic sensibilities and my poetic craft to other forms of living, but particularly of writing.
Constant growth.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks again for joining us, Alan, the ever-growing, ever-learning writer and culture connoisseur. You all can find both of his books at blacklawrencepress.com, and you can follow his work on Instagram or Twitter at Alan_Chazaro. That's Alan_Chazaro. While we're in a poetic mood, I gotta show love to all of the past poets we've had on the show. So in the notes for this episode, we'll leave a Spotify playlist link that features their interviews. And while we're giving out love, I gotta show big love to Ashley Ann Krigbaum. She's the angelic artist who produced the original interview with Alan. This version of an interview with Alan was produced by the poetic professional known as Marisol Medina Cadena. The editor extraordinaire is Jessica Plachik. Our excellent engineer is Sil Muller. The ever-energetic engagement team is composed of Sarah Pineda, Lena Blanco, Kiana Moganum, and Jacqueline Carver-Hall. KQED's exceptional executives are Erica Aguilar, David Marcus, and Holly Kernan. I'm your hard-headed host, Mr. Harshaw, hoping you all have a heck of a day. Right Now-ish is a KQED production.